Okay. Go get him, boys. Get him. Good job. Good job. Yeah, baby. You want some of it? You got it. You got it. It's all right. Calm down. They're gone. They're gone. Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is Insurgent Radio Network, and this is Terrible Tommy right here next to Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern and Steakhouse and Filling Station, right beside our weapons of mass destruction used equipment yard, where we bring them in here from all over the world after they dump them, you know. They don't want to even pay to bring them back over here, so we get some of our red Chinese friends to bring them over here for us. Then we patch them up and paint them and all kinds of stuff. And then you drive your 18-wheelers down here in the summertime and late spring and also fall, and we'll fix you up good with a heavy armored, and we'll throw in a truckload of ammunition too for that heavy stuff. Yeah. Well, the date is the 30th of July, 2014. Yeah, almost forgot what year it was there. And it's a great day here in Indiana. Yeah, I've got all kinds of things cooking today. And, boy, Sling Blade emailed me and said, I waited an hour for you. And I emailed him back, mislaid your phone number, man. You should have left your phone number. So anyhow, we'll catch him either another day yet this week or next Tuesday. He's working two jobs, so you know how that goes, boys. Well, I keep trying to tell you, boys, nature's on our side. Mother Nature's been on our side all along if we just depend on her a little bit more and quit trying to interfere with her operations. So let's listen in here and to what's going on over in Africa.
A woman who has tested positive for Ebola but was forcibly taken out of hospital by her family.
And it's feared she could spread the disease further in the city of 1 million. And now the outbreak affecting Sierra Leone, Guinea and Liberia has spread to Nigeria. A man who died after collapsing on arrival at Lagos Airport has tested positive for Ebola. It's the first registered fatality from the virus in Africa's most populous nation. Lagos, one of the world's biggest cities with a population of more than 20 million. And now there's a worry that one of the world's deadliest diseases could spread here. Authorities say all people who had contact with the Ebola victim have also been quarantined. But some are already sounding the alarm.
Our society in Nigeria today has been characterized by uncleanness. So many areas are not clean, and which is an open door for this Ebola virus to be spread all over.
Humans transmit Ebola through bodily fluids, including sweat. There's no known cure, and it's often fatal. Some Nigerians question whether their country is prepared for an outbreak.
Doctors are on strike. So if such things should happen at this particular time, I wonder how the effect on the people.
More than 600 people have died across West Africa since the beginning of the latest Ebola epidemic.
At the International AIDS Conference in Melbourne, Australia, policymakers, scientists and health workers pledged to continue their fight against HIV.
Although a lot of progress has been made, the medical community still grapples with reducing infections and access to HIV care in countries where stigma is still attached to the illness.
This family would only meet us in a park. It was too risky at home. For them, it would be disastrous for the neighbors to find out about the family's diagnosis.
name that you can get.
Today I discovered that I was HIV positive. The world around me turned black. I feared I would lose everything at once. It was terrible. It pained me so much.
The family have known they're infected for 2 years. It forces them to live double lives. Rena works as a maid. Her husband, Vijendra, is a tailor. The children go to school. No one can know they're also HIV positive. 33-year-old Vijendra knows what happens when he tells the truth.
I told my former boss. He fired me.
2.1 million people in India live with HIV. The number of new infections is dropping. One of the reasons for this is a state information campaign distributing condoms to high-risk groups such as prostitutes, gay men, and migrant workers. Here in an orphanage for children with AIDS in New Delhi, health ministry statements make little sense. The advice is to live a traditional life, not just to use a condom.
Stigma continues. People are really, still very few people are able to come out and talk about living with HIV. For most people, it's a problem because they really fear losing their job or their homes or the landlord will kick them out. All those are still issues.
Most of those with HIV in India are poor. For them, the only solution would seem to be generic drugs. The industry is booming with government backing. It's handing out HIV drugs free and regularly sets caps on the cost of medication. Families like Rena's are dependent on these drug copies. Further help and advice, which the state doesn't provide, is offered by some voluntary organizations like the NAS Foundation. Money for school books, a new pair of shoes, and desperately needed vitamins.
I can't afford good food for myself. I don't earn enough money. Here we're given a supply of good food once a month.
And not just that. It also gives them the feeling of being part of society, despite their infection.
Straight at the Bear, disasters has captured the world's attention recently.
Well, that's just a little bit of what's going on there in Africa and India and all over the place. And it'll get worse because the natural laws are in place. The natural laws are in place. And to catch that where they're encouraging people to lead a traditional lifestyle, well, you know what that means. For the most part, to be monogamous. Now, I don't know about you, but if I was developing a relationship, a new relationship, which I'm not planning, why switch horses in the middle of the stream, baby? Anyhow, I would ask for a medical checkup. If there's any kind of serious relationship that you're interested in, I'd say let's both get checked up, checked out. And if the person does not want to do that or resists too much, I go on down the road, baby. That's right. Because especially not just in big cities, not just in the big metropolitan areas, but I mean, you don't know, a man doesn't know what the woman's been doing or who she's been laying with, and the woman don't know who the man's been laying with. And since people are getting less persnickety about who they lay with, you better know what kind of health they're in before you pursue a relationship. And I think if white people will follow these some basic, simple things to try to keep your health intact and not catch some kind of a disease, you'll be okay. While millions of people around this earth are going to die, baby. And you better impress this stuff on your kids, you know. Because they're getting all kinds of the other kind of propaganda out there. Oh, it's no big deal. You can take a pill. That'll take care of it. Yeah. not like it used to be 50 years ago when get a shot of penicillin and that would take care of it. Not anymore. I don't recall now, but I think I reminded you people or told you people the other day that, you know, back in the day when we just had card files and address books, one of our methods of protecting ourselves somewhat was to put well-known people's addresses and phone numbers or whatever, or even business cards in our files. People around town, professionals, politicians, and so forth. So we used to lace our files with those, so if the federales pick up your address book or your file, if back then, they're going to run down a whole lot of blind alleys and get nowhere. Well, you can do the same thing today with your computer. You can put the phone numbers and or business phone numbers and addresses and so forth in amongst all your other addresses if you keep them. I don't recommend keeping a bunch of addresses anyhow, but still, that's one way of driving them crazy because they don't know who for sure, you know. And especially when you're running as a lone wolf, they don't know whether that doctor you got in your file is one of yours. They don't know if that cop in your files is one of you. So that's another method of using to at least slow them down. Be your own little NSA man. Yes, and I'm reminding you again, over 16 million people in this country are working for less than $7.50 an hour. And nobody can live reasonably well or live reasonably for that kind of money. So wherever you go, spread the word like I do, and I've said this before, when I if I do find myself in Walmart, rarely, sorry, I meet the greeter and say, you know, you're being shafted by this company. This company is making billions, the biggest money-making company in the country, and they're giving millions and millions to the state of Israel, and like that. And when I go to a fast food place, I said, you deserve more money. Do you know how much money your CEOs are making? And I tell them. Or I hand them a little brochure about something like that. And so one good way of spreading dissatisfaction, which they should be very dissatisfied, is just tell them economically you're being shafted. Once you get their attention on the economic end of it, later on they'll listen to you when you talk about race. I was approached by a man yesterday who was running for a very interesting office in this region. I'm not going to say who or where, but I agreed to help him out. So in the background, a lot of times you can, if you know somebody that's pretty much in your camp and you can help them out, you can try to do that. You want to hear what went on between Nitwit and the President Obama yesterday? Well, Israel's Channel 1 has published a transcript in Hebrew, and the Times of Israel has translated into English. Okay, here we go. Barack Obama says, I demand that Israel agrees to an immediate unilateral ceasefire and halt all offensive activities, in particular, airstrikes. Nitwick says, and what will Israel receive in exchange for a ceasefire? He probably wants another $3 or $4 billion, of course. And some more weapons, some more airplanes. Jet planes that you got to fly clear out over the Mediterranean to turn them around. You can't turn around a jet fighter in such a small spot as Israel. Obama, I believe that Hamas will cease its rocket fire. Silence will be met with silence. Okay, Nitwick says, Hamas broke all five previous ceasefires. It's a terrorist organization dedicated to the destruction of Jewland. Obama says, I repeat, and expect Israel to stop all its military activities unilaterally. The pictures of destruction in Gaza distance the world from Israel's position. And you're making it tough as hell on me here in Washington, D.C. Even if you do have a bunch of Christian Zionists out there. Okay, Nitwit says, Kerry's proposal was completely unrealistic and gives Hamas military and diplomatic advantages. Advantages? They got no tanks, no planes. Oh, shit. Barack says, within a week of the end of Israel's military activities, Qatar and Turkey will begin negotiations with Hamas based on the 2012 understandings, including Israel's commitment to remove the siege and restrictions on Gaza. Well, what about your settlements? And Tommy said, what about those fucking settlements you keep building? Oh, man. This, you know, any other country, the UN would have a peacekeeping force there immediately, if not sooner. Okay, Nitwit says Qatar and Turkey are the biggest supporters of Hamas. It's impossible to rely on them to be fair mediators. Like us Jews, we're the fairest of them all. Just look in the mirror. Barack says, I trust Qatar and Turkey. Israel is not in a position that can choose its mediators. Whoa. Mr. Black Man, you better watch it. Okay, Nitwick says, I protest because Hamas can continue to launch rockets and use tunnels for self-defense. Obama's interrupting. Nitwick says, the ball's in Israel's court and it must end all its military activities. And that was the end of it. So Obama did pretty good at standing up to Nitwit there. What do you think? But nothing's happening. You don't see Israel pulling out or stopping their bombardment. It's unbelievable, boys and girls. It's like watching a bunch of kids fighting in a sandbox watching these people. Of course, right away, the experts come out and say, that was a totally false thing. That discourse never happened at all. Well, here's what happens when you try to make everybody happy. An opinion article in Germany's biggest tabloid, which criticized the country's Muslim community for honor killings and disproportionate criminality among Muslim youth, sparked fierce criticism from adepts of Islam and opposition politicians alike. See what happens? They got the Jews in there, now they got the Islam's in there, and they got everybody in there, and so your country starts going to hell because you can't form any kind of consensus. It's simple. The editorial by Nicholas Fest, vice editor-in-chief of Bild am Sonntag newspaper, was published on Sunday. Quote, I don't believe in God, but at the same time, Christianity, Judaism, and Buddhism don't bother me. Only Islam bothers me more and more, wrote Fest. Binding Islam together with criminal activities. Quote, I'm bothered by the considerable disproportionate criminality of youth from the Muslim backgrounds, unquote, wrote Fest. Well, I'm sure that's true, as quoted by the local. Quote, I'm bothered by Islam's murderous contempt for women and homosexuals. I'm bothered by forced marriages, justices of the peace, honor killings. Such cultural manifestations are making Islam a barrier to integration. We're never going to have integration, wrote Fest. He called for more deliberate policies when dealing with claims for asylum and visa applications to Germany. Quote, I don't need any imported racism, and I don't need anything else Islam stands for, the editor-in-chief concluded. Wow, man. I guess he's coming down on the side of the Jews. He may be a Jew. Fast speculations begot a waterfall of angry online comments towards the journalist and Bild and Sonntag newspaper. German politicians joined in too, like they always do, rat pack. Everybody rat packs, calling the article racist. Wait a minute, I thought he was against racist. Well, anyhow, such politicians as the Green Party's Volker Becker demanded an apology from the newspaper to German Muslims, who currently make up 4.3 million, over 5% of the country's population, and you know it's at least double, Mr. Deutscher. Later on, Sunday Bild's editor-in-chief, Kai Diekmann, made an attempt to calm the debate with an online editorial. Quote, for Bild and the newspaper owner, Alex Springer, there has been a clear, unshakable dividing line between Islam as a world religion and the degrading ideology of Islamism, stated Diekmann, who is also an executive board member of the Turkish daily Hurriyet. Quote, that's why in Bild and Axel Springer publications there is no room for generalized, depreciating comments against Islam and the people who believe in Allah, la, 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 Diekmann said, adding that the newspaper does not welcome a debate along religious lines. That's because all religions lie, and debate brings that out, says Tommy. Quote, we don't want to lead it, take it up, or conjure it, for they always end in disaster. History has shown that to us often enough, Diekmann wrote. Well, all three of the Abrahamic religions are crazier than a bedbug, pure and simple. And as long as they exist, there's going to be turmoil in the world. Well, you got regular racism, and now you got micro-racism. A different form of racism on college campuses. It's called microaggressions. An annoying student walks away after being called sexy solely based on the fact that she is multi-ethnic, multiracial. An Asian American student rolls his eyes after being asked about his ethnic or racial origin for the umpteenth time. Oh, poor, poor student. A black student groans after being told, quote, you're pretty for a dark-skinned girl, unquote. Well, she ought to be happy, because most dark-skinned women aren't pretty, which is the truth. These comments reflect a form of racism, microaggressions. Da-da-da-da-da-da! Microaggressions are used to describe the subtle ways that racial and ethnic gender and other stereotypes and quadraphonics can traumatize students at a predominantly white institution. ASUO External Vice President Patrick Kindren talks about his own experiences with microaggressions as a black student on the campus. Quote, people have asked me questions like, why do you talk so white? And do you play football here? Kindred said. These comments make me feel like I'm always fighting against this box or fighting to get out of the box. He's also experienced microaggressions with his current ASUO. Whatever the hell that is, I don't even know what it is. Quote, when I tell people I'm the vice president, they ask, oh, really? For the Black Student Union? He said. Quote, when I tell them I'm the vice president of the student body, they say, oh, you're a real vice president, unquote. That hurts my feelings, man. Junior ethnic studies major Laura Maja, I think she's an Indian or a Paki, experiences harm within the university classroom when they're talking about sex and gender. Quote, I have an intersex condition. My genetics are different than a lot of CIS gendered women, unquote, and not understandable. Majay said, quote, it annoys me when people try to use chromosomes to determine a person's identity. What? Unquote. These comments made her struggle with her own identity. Quote, hearing those comments made me feel not legitimate, she said. I was doubting whether or not I could call myself a woman, unquote. It hurt me profusely. She learned to ignore these comments, but still felt the students should be mindful of what they say. Now, you see, this is a refinement of the regular racist charge, where you just flat out call them a nigger, you know. So they got beyond that pretty much. So now they're refining it down to micro racism. Quote, we need to be more aware of words and how they affect people around you, Majay said. You hurt people. It's hateful. Microaggressions are discussed on college campuses nationwide. This has prompted student organizers to build awareness around this issue. You know what all this is sensitivity training, the same brainwashing process they used in Korea against American troops or POWs. Same thing. And it's working. It works really good for them. Yes, it does. Let's see here. Senior Justin McDaniels is among the organizers who organized the recent I2MOSU campaign in response to the racist incidents that happened during spring at Oregon State University. Quote, the university doesn't offer places of support. You mean they don't run a bar on the campus? But Daniel said microaggressions happen every day. To spark discussion on the issue, they organized two actions. One was held on March 7th, attracting more than 200 pupils across the campus to write on bright colored paper about their experiences with microaggressions racism. A solidarity march followed a week later, which was composed of students, faculty, staff, and community members. Although the action is done, he hopes that people will continue the conversation. Quote, we received lots of positive feedback, McDaniel said. It was good to see that our efforts were utilized by people who need it, unquote. Kindred also sees the need for more discussions on microaggressions and racism. He hopes that his administration can help create a more culturally competent space. Would you explain that to me? Culturally competent space. However, he feels that the conversation shouldn't stop there. Quote, I hate to think that because we are a multifaceted exec of color, now it's expected for something to change, Kindred said. I would hope that anyone in office could continue to help change the campus climate because it's much too goddamn racist. And now it's micro-racist. And see, what comes after that? Millie racist? Oh, yeah. Well, let's check this one out. Promoting diversity has negative consequences for some people in the workplace. And I'll let you guess who. In the latest round of bad news for race mixing, I mean diversity, it turns out that women and people of color who try to encourage more diverse hiring practices potentially face a lot of backlash. White dudes who do the same, however, tend to receive praise because the world is just kind of sucky that way, like that, I guess. Though this sort of thing probably isn't shocking to any woman or people of color. You notice how they call themselves color, but you can't call them colored? Or they don't want you to call them colored. You can call them anything you want if you got the balls. Who have ever found themselves in a leadership position, It is a little disheartening how widespread the problem seems to be. In a recent study, we got to watch those studies. Researchers at the University of Colorado looked at performance reviews of 362 executives, including directors and CEOs. They found that women and people of color who were promoting non-white, non-male hires received lower evaluations than those who went the traditional route of mostly paying attention just to white dudes. Even worse, performance feedback suggests that women and people of color who promote more diverse race-mixing hiring practices are seen as less competent than those who don't. Well, that's probably scientifically provable. Because apparently trying to break down the traditional racist and sexist attitudes that still plague the hiring process means that a person clearly doesn't know what they're doing in their job. The kicker, though, has been the fact that white men who promote diversity and race mixing don't face this perception at all. It's too bad. They don't get crap. In fact, they're given better performance reviews when they promote race mixing and diversity. But when color people do it, it don't work that way. The whole thing is both unfair and pretty bizarre. Is it that people are more comfortable with change when it comes from someone who looks like them? In this case, a white dude. Is it maybe that people feel like having one non-white and or non-dude person in a position of power is clearly enough? So if that person wants to add more people like them, clearly they're out of line. Does it perhaps have something to do with the people's tendency to like the idea of equality just so long as the change is not being led by the people who are oppressed? Oppressed. Or do people just perceive anyone promoting someone like them as biased? Unless, of course, it's a white dude spotlighting other white dudes. Whatever the reason, it has obvious implications for diversifying the corporate world, race mixing the corporate world. For a long time, people have held to the hope that if women and people of color can't just get a foot in the door, that soon more diverse race mixing leadership will lead to more diverse hiring practices and promotion, and that eventually companies will be much more representative of what the general population actually looks like. Garbage. But it seems the world is more resistant to change than that. If executives correctly feel that looking out for the interests of people like themselves will hurt their careers, they're less likely to do it, even if they do believe in increased race mixing. Meanwhile, I'd like to say that we would maybe find some hope in the fact that white guys get a perception boost from promoting race mixing. Yeah, they sure do. Which might spur them to increase the number of women and people of color in their companies. But realistically, if the world ever waited for affluent, straight, white men to fix discrimination, we'd all still have the social norms of the 19th century. So I won't be holding my breath, this guy said. Well, that's true, but they try to keep it among the ruling class. We got to keep the ruling class mostly white. We'll put in a token nigger once in a while, but we got to keep the ruling class. We don't care about the working class. That's why we put those high-rise incubators for the welfare mamas in the white working class neighborhoods. They don't put them in the rich neighborhoods. They don't put them in the wealthy neighborhoods. They don't put them in the Hamptons. They don't put those damn high-rise incubators in Beverly Hills, Palm Springs, things like that. That's why. Hold it. Wait a minute here. That's why 20 years ago, when I put a sign up in an exclusive area of town in San Diego, right up from the college in La Jolla, I put a big sign right up on the corner, this is be the future home of low-income housing. People were almost driving off the road that saw that sign. They went crazy. They went absolutely nuts until they found out it was a scam by a terrible dummy. If you want to have some fun in your town, get a well-painted up sign by a professional. Make it look really real stuff. That this area here is going to be the future home of low-income housing for the masses, or something like that. And go put those signs up in the rich end of town if you on a vacant lot or something. If you want to have a lot of fun, that is fun. Well, they're getting excited over there in Europe. No, this is Jerusalem. The situation facing Europeans' Jewry is simply intolerable, unacceptable, and inexcusable, Israeli Jewish Congress President Vladimir Slautsker told MKs and foreign diplomats at a special session of the Knesset Immigration, Absorption, and Diaspora Committee on Monday, calling the rise in anti-Semitic incidents. It's interesting how Jews only consider anti-Semitic as being anti-Jew. When, I mean, the people that are demonstrating against them, the Islamic people, are more Semitic than those Jews. Calling the rise in anti-Semitic incidents accompanying Israel's invasion of Gaza an SOS situation. Slausker warned that if left unchecked, such behavior could lead to another European genocide. Quote, never before since the Holocaust have we seen such a situation as today, unquote, he said, referring to the continent-wide demonstrations by pro-Palestinian activists, a number of which have generated into violence, and many which have featured racist rhetoric. Quote, we are potentially looking at the beginning of another Holocaust now. These events, violent demonstrations, and expressions of anti-Judaism will only grow in scale across Europe, he asserts. Addressing the legislators and representatives of a number of European governments, including those of Denmark, Holland, and France, the oligarch and former head of the Russian Jewish Congress calls for Jewish communities across the continent to unite and consolidate. Well, then what are you going to do? You're outnumbered, man. You're outnumbered by a lot. Slausker also called on European governments to impose what he calls strict regulations on the formatted content of demonstrations in order to prevent further violence against Jews. In other words, you're supposed to shut down any opposition to the Jews. Citing a recent proposal by Belgian Jewry to establish a position of special European commissioner to monitor and combat anti-Jewism and racism, Slausker said such measures would help send a strong message that European leadership is united and committed to combating anti-Jewism, racism, and xenophobia. A number of Israeli legislators echoed Slausker's call for the more proactive European approach to combating anti-Jewism. Fight together with us, unquote. M.K. Shimon Oyan urged the diplomats present, adding that he was opposed to dangerous propaganda that painted Israel as an aggressor because Israel has never been aggressor. They never have done anything. And when they say they sunk the USS Liberty, they lie. It's all a lie. We never did anything like that. We are God's chosen people, and we wouldn't do anything like that because we're really, really nice people. Jews in Europe have been targeted because they are Jewish. Oh, and not because of any territorial claim or conflict in the Middle East, the lawmaker asserted, but because they are against them because they are Jews. Oh, you catch on. Citing attacks against Jews in France, including a recent riot in the Parisian suburb of Sarcelles, in which the synagogue and Jewish stores were targeted by people. Quote, we ask you to stop this wheel of anti-Jewish, anti-Jew hatred in Europe, he added, calling anti-Zionism the new anti-Semitism. The world must understand that Israel is fighting against terrorism, Committee Chairman Yoel Buzov said in response to Oyan's statement, echoing the prevailing sentiment among the Jew lawmakers. The state would not allow one Jew to remain undefended. M.K. Yisrael Hassan chimed in, asserting that the fates of European and Israeli Jews are intertwined. Jews in Belgium are being asked, why are you killing children in Gaza? Raphael Warner, a representative of Belgium's Jewish community, recounted, asserting that there is little distinction between Jews and Israelis. Well, it's a Jewish state, you dumb son of a bitch. There is, so the Jews are going to have to take the blame no matter what. Are you kidding? There is no Hezbollah in Europe, he complained, using the Hebrew term for public diplomacy. The situation in Europe is dire, said MP Meir Habib, a Jew who represents French expatriates in the National Assembly, while praising the French political leadership of their commitment to defending the country's Jew community. He said that hearing calls for the deaths of Jews at demonstrations left him concerned that there will be a second Toulouse, in reference to the 2012 shooting deaths of several Jews at a Jewish school in that city. Decrying what he perceived as a lack of concern for the mass deaths accompanying the Syrian civil war, Habib complained that accusations of disproportionate action by Israeli forces have been harmful and asserted that the media is the primary problem, even though a lot of the media is owned by Jews. Most French Jews will remain in France despite a high rate of immigration, he concluded, imploring his Israel counterparts to help those who stay. European representatives present during the meeting sought to assure the room that their governments are committed to have defended the Jews. Quote, we refuse to allow any conflict to be imported into French society. Well, what can you do to stop it? A representative of the French embassy said, the security of Jew citizens in France is of utmost priority for us. Our determination will not falter unless we can make enough money. Forceful measures have to be taken against cases of anti-Jewism, or it will increase, Dutch Ambassador Kasper Veldkamp said. The situation is severe. We risk importing the conflict from the Middle East to Europe, when Europe should be export respect. Danish Ambassador Jesper Bahr agreed, but cautioned the communal leaders and legislators about linking anti-Jewism and the current Israeli military operation. Quote, we're discussing anti-Jewism. There's also another discussion going on at the table pertaining to Operation Protective Edge, he said. Quote, I would warn against mixing apples and oranges. We're, as a society, also defend the right of the people in Denmark to voice their protests against the actions happening on the ground. You know the position of my government on that, unquote. However, he added, Denmark supports Israel's right to defend itself and will exert all efforts to fight the scourge of anti-Jewism. These guys, they don't know whether to shit or go blind. Well, Abe Foxman of the ADL is not very happy. Anti-Semitism, anti-Jewism, in the wake of the current Hamas-Israel conflict is mushrooming across Europe and Latin America. Abe Foxman, national director of the Anti-Defecation League, tells Newsmax TV, quote, "Many of those who come to demonstrate against Israel want to harm Jews," unquote, Foxman said. It's more like getting even, doesn't it? Quote, "We're seeing anti-Jew violence, anti-Semitic insinuations." Wait a minute. If they're Semites, how can they be anti-Semitic? If the Muslims are Semitic, how can they be anti-Semitic? "We're seeing demonstrations moving Israeli embassies to synagogues to Jewish stores. A Jewish museum in Norway was closed because of threats. Yes, there is an element of anti-Jewism. It is brought about by large numbers of fundamentalist Muslims, or Muslims who are anti-Jewism. There are rampant hypocrisy," Foxman said, "and the world seemingly unfazed by all the violence committed by Muslims against other Muslims and Christians, yet there is outrage on the Jewish people defending themselves. That's all they're doing." Quote, "I'll tell you what troubles me," Foxman said on America's Forum, unquote. "As I look in the world, I see Muslims killing Muslims. I see them killing Muslims by the thousands, by the tens of thousands in Syria. I see Muslims killing Muslims in Libya, in Afghanistan, in Iraq. Iraq Muslims are killing Christians. They're destroying mosques and churches, and there's an indifference in the world. There are no cameras out there. There are no editorials. There are no demonstrations in the streets of Paris, Rome, and London. It seems that only when Jews, in their own defense, defend their men, women, and children, are forced to kill Muslims and Palestinians. That's when the world wakes up." That's right, Abe, because the world down deep don't like you. Don't you get the message, Abe?
Joining me now to discuss all the latest from the region, as well as the seemingly pro-Hamas slant being demonstrated by the Obama administration, Abe Foxman, National Director of the Anti-Defamation League. Abe, we thank you for joining us from Newsmax New York this morning.
It's good to be back.
Abe, what is your reaction to what Mrs. Clinton had to say on Fusion yesterday?
You know what? I'm not sure I really focused in on what she was saying.
Well, Abe, there were words to the effect of, I can understand, and this is a paraphrase, but she's speaking about civilian casualties in Gaza and almost the necessity. It seemed to be suggesting that there was a necessity for Hamas to use offices, schools, civilian areas because of the congested space. And so that prompted civilian casualties. It almost seemed as if the former First Lady was, in essence, giving Gaza a pass, at least to my ears.
Well, you know, I'm not sure that's what I heard, but she's been out there defending Israel's right to defend itself. She has been condemning Hamas. She has been condemning the use of civilian institutions such as hospitals and UNRWA schools. So I don't see this as a departure from her very, very clear view about Israel's right to defend itself and the need to find some solution somewhere that's not too far in the distance.
Well, Abe, I wanted to ask you also about the current Secretary of State. He's also received a lot of criticism for his efforts trying to broker a ceasefire deal here. And, of course, there was that unanimous decision by the Israeli Security Council to reject the Kerry-backed ceasefire. Do you think some of the criticism to Kerry is unfair?
Yes, I do, and I've said so. This was not a Kerry peace proposal. It was misnamed, whatever. It was a draft that the Secretary of State, I understand, shared with the Israeli cabinet, asking for their reactions to this draft document. It was not a Kerry proposal that the Secretary of State, I understand, shared with the Israeli cabinet, asking for their reactions to this draft document. It was not a Kerry proposal. It was a working document. It was, in fact, confidential. There are differences between the United States and Israel, and there are disagreements. But at the end of the day, it's still the one country that stands up for Israel's right to defend itself, defends it in the UN in Geneva, defends it in the UN in New York. And let's not forget thousands of Israeli lives, and I would even say thousands and thousands of Palestinians' lives have been saved because of Iron Dome. And it was the United States who invested in it, who joined with Israel's vision, and it has made a tremendous difference in this struggle. And at the end of the day, with all the disagreements and all the differences, now the United States is not in support of Hamas. It is in support of Israel. And there will be no ceasefire without the intervention of the U.S. And so, yeah, we can be unhappy from time to time. But all in all, this is still the only country that stands up for Israel. Look, in Latin America in the last 24 hours, five countries, from Venezuela to Brazil to El Salvador to Peru and Chile, have called back their ambassadors. What hypocrisy is this? In Europe, you see, you know, the demonstrations in the streets full of anti-Semitism. So, yeah, I know we'd like it to be a little bit better. We'd like American support to be 100%. But even when it isn't, it's still the strongest ally that Israel has.
Abe, interesting that the American taxpayers had to pay for the Iron Dome to protect these Hebes. What business does our government have financing not only all the weapons give away to these countries, but this sophisticated Iron Dome, which we may need here one of these days? It's enough to gag a maggot. I get a kick out of how these conservatives have changed their stripes over the years. It's full of anti-racial and anti-national socialist type stuff. Here's from, they're talking about Common Core indoctrination, control of the children, control of the nation. Well, somebody's going to control it. Many conservatives make references in regards to how our country is becoming less of a constitutional republic. It hasn't been a constitutional republic since it began, stupid. This is made apparent by the way our federal government has worked to interfere with education. That constitutional republic and the Constitution was manipulated by the ruling class in most cases. Most Americans who pick up a paper are aware of Common Core and what it consists of. Parents of children who are fighting against having their children taught under a Common Core program know what it is firsthand and experience. Well, I suspect that they're leaving a lot of religious crap out of it, and that's what's got them upset. The teachers who have stood up against the teaching Common Core understand that the political gravity of the education system. Well, you're a little too late standing up. Yet, how many Americans know why the government is pushing a system that manipulates historical facts into popular opinion, like they haven't done that for 100, 200 years in this country? Nobody's manipulated historical facts and popular opinion. Fidgets with the way math has been proven to have been solved and takes away critical thinking skills of children. Takes away? They don't have it now. They haven't had it in 40 years. The answer lies within the confines of pushing more government on we the people through our very own education system. This is not a new, as history has shown, a similar pattern taking place in the past with, here we go, boys and girls, Hitler and the infiltration of the Nazi ideology into the German school systems. As our country takes on Obamacare, Common Core, and new gun regulations, by the day we are on a slippery slope to a new form of Nazism, but in our very own country. See, it used to be communism, but the conservative movement switched over and concentrated on Hitler now and National Socialism. By allowing Common Core into the educational system, we're permitting our youth to be indoctrinated with a socialist, progressive, liberal agenda. Explain that, will you? Socialist, progressive, liberal agenda. These are buzzwords. I'd like to have them explained. The First Amendment to freedom of speech is being stifled. Huh. Guess what? Whenever I try to get on TV or anything, it's you conservative right-wingers that don't want me on there. And we're building a future for subpar educated students that will allow them to be manipulated by the government agenda and propaganda as adults. Double talk, double talk, double talk. Hitler is primarily known for his slaughter of the Jews and his attempt to develop an Aryan race. Aryan, misspelled. However, Rome was not built in a day, neither was Hitler's army or the power he had over Germany. With the use of indoctrination and manipulation, he infiltrated the elementary schools with his ideology that pushes his agenda. There's nothing that they're saying that Hitler did that people in this country didn't do through the schools. A history place, A Prelude of War, describes this infiltration. Began in the schools. Well, our schools have been infiltrated with crap, race-mixing crap and everything else for a long, long time. And how it resulted in lowering education among the German graduates, that's not true. The average IQ of the German graduating in Germany at the time were well over 100 and probably well over 120, 150. This writing goes on to describe how history was rewritten to place emphasis on Nazi themes of racial struggle. Well, that's because it had been forgotten and needed to be talked about. There is a racial struggle. Always has been a racial struggle. Sounds familiar? It should, since one of the most detrimental things Common Core is becoming renowned for its rewriting of historical events as it pertains to the Constitution and our forefathers. It reminds me of the time I debated a John Birch Society leader, and when I informed him that Thomas Jefferson, that he eulogized greatly and worshipped, was a racist and owned over 200 slaves and never freed but one, and that was on his deathbed, guy denied it. He didn't. Oh no, that's not true. You must be a communist or a Nazi. In September 2013, The Blaze, here you go, that's dickheads outfit, reported a school in Texas using a book that rewrote the Second Amendment from the U.S. ratified definition of a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, unquote, to a rewritten textbook version saying the people have the right to keep and bear arms in a state militia. Just as Hitler infiltrated Jewish racism. Wait a minute. Just as Hitler infiltrated Jewish racism among elementary kids to push his anti-Jew agenda, the gun control views of Barack Obama have been infiltrating our elementary schools of present day to help push a liberal anti-gun control agenda. If our children aren't being taught their freedoms by a government based on curriculum, then it's evident that the government has every intention of taking our liberties and pushing us towards a future dictatorship. I think we're pretty much under one now, Mr. Conservative asshole. Another disturbing parallel to Hitler's indoctrination was the fear held by teachers. During the time Hitler's control over the country's educational curriculum, teachers feared for more than their jobs. They feared being put in a concentration camp, according to the research found in the history place, A Prelude to War. The fear of teachers losing their jobs is a fear held by many educators today. While some have braved the political storm and spoken out against Common Core, many of the other teachers have continued to remain silent. Well, I'll guarantee you that if these Christian Zionists get more power, they would put these liberal teachers in a concentration camp, whether you agree with them or not. These conservative Christian Zionists are more dangerous, as far as I'm concerned, than some of the loony left. Because they are vicious. They can be vicious. And that's why you have to watch out. Don't depend on them to protect you. If the shit hits a fan, stick with the people who you know absolutely know what's going on. That stuff's right out of Glenn Pecker's propaganda machine. Yeah. Glenn the Large Pecker. Well, that's it for today. I'll be back tomorrow, Thursday, and we'll see what other crap we can dig up. Don't worry about it. Worse is better for now. But just watch out who you hang out with. You can't, you know, you say you don't like progressive liberals. Well, yeah. But you can't like these Christian Zionist right wingers either. I have no truck with either side myself. However, I will use things from each side if it benefits our racial cause. So let's keep it simple. Keep our eye on the ball and shut up.